And now, it's time for Miss WeedWiki Speaks. You're listening to Miss WeedWiki, and I'm here today with my guest, Yannick Craigwell, who's owner of the cannabis edible baked goods company, Treats and Treats, based out of Vancouver. Yannick is also an advisory member of the People's Alliance of Cannabis in Canada. So thank you so much, Yannick, for joining me today. Could you tell our listeners where exactly you're joining me from? I ask because you travel quite a bit.
This is fair. I am currently in the six, smack dab in the center of it. The center of the freaking universe, as they like to say.
Does it feel like it? Like, because you, how long have you been living in the center of the six?
It's been about a year now. Actually, it's January 1st will be a year that I've been here. I lived here before in 2008, I think it was. It feels like it's the center of Canada. It doesn't feel like the center of the universe, but it does feel like the center of Canada.
So does that mean they live up to their hype? And
no, it doesn't. It's just more so you feel like things operate the way they should, depending what jurisdiction you're coming from. Me being from Quebec, it feels like things operate, and due to them operating well, they grow at an exponentially better rate, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So there's levels that are here that aren't elsewhere, and there are a few of them.
There's a speed to execution here that they,
yes,
on certain things they're passionate about that you don't see in necessarily other parts
and, of the and they have the resources in every sector to make things happen. They aren't dependent on another urban center to conclude their business.
Makes sense. So, yeah, and that makes perfect sense. Could you tell me and tell our listeners about how your journey in cannabis started? How old were you?
That's a great question, and I like that question, actually, because when I was growing up, I was always opposed to my older brother in the house, and my mother always had a certain view of cannabis use according to his life. And then for me, being a little brat, it was always a, I'm not like him, I'm good. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to have premarital sex. I'm not going to do drugs. Of course, the premarital sex was the first to go at an early age. End of 2008, start of 2009, just a cornucopia of negative situations within my life. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to drop out of school this semester because I can't afford it. I'm going to stay inside the house. I had recently just finished being homeless. So I was in a home finally. I was like, you know what? I'll stay in here the entire winter. It was locked down. It was not locked down, but it was cold. It was real cold. And I got some joints pre-rolled, and I made an album. And I realized it helped me do so many things, like it assisted with my speech impediment. It helped me release creativity. And I had a whole nother point of view on what marijuana was supposed to be. Not that I endorse it or anything like that, but I no longer saw it as like, oh my God, that's bad. I was like, this isn't that bad. If anything, it kind of helps me. So 2009 was when I really started smoking or even knowing anything about weed.
And our listeners now, they know that you're in the six, but where were you living in 2008, 2009? Where did you grow up?
In Ville de la Salle, Montréal, Quebec. LaSalle, Quebec, Montreal.
Thanks for the translation. I like the
no
thing
problem.
That, you know, we're catering to all of our listeners and the entire
yes.
audience,
yes.
But you know, you had to put in La Joie in there so that we could know
way,
from there.
It's not the Jean's Quebec. I'm 100% Quebecois. Even when I don't want to be, there are certain things about me that it stains my character, but I digress. I digress. So after that, I tried the six because I was tired of Quebec, but I realized that what I wanted to to do. I was coming from such an unstructured place that was a square trying to go into a circle hole to the rest of the world in terms of a jurisdiction, like for school. So I went to just bypass doing CJEP and just going straight into university, but they wanted me to take grade 12 basically. And I was like, that's not what I wanted to come and do. So I came back home to Montreal. And then I got tired of Montreal again. It's like, I got to go further than Toronto. It's either going to be San Francisco or Vancouver. I was actually choosing between San Francisco, Vancouver, or Madrid, oddly enough.
Wow. Yeah. So what? Long story. Why were they your choices? What was appealing or calling you to each of those places?
So I was going to move to Spain to be a French second language teacher or translator and just live in Spain. I really liked Spain. It was my favorite place in Europe. I always loved San Francisco, even though I had never been. I was like, I'm getting out of here, so I better choose where I want to go and make it work. And so I detailed all my options, all three. I looked at their infrastructure, rental costs, what I would need to do to be admissible to the city that I wanted to live in, yada, yada, yada. And then the financial collapse hit. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stay in my own country. I'm just going to go to Vancouver, make it simple. I had a friend who had lived out in Vancouver who I was like, I could get a job immediately just to at least have income once I got there. And then I grind because, man, the cost of living in Vancouver was so high. And that's kind of where I got into the baking again, actually.
Tell us how that started then.
Yeah, I needed. So Vancouver made me realize, like, coming from Quebec that I was coming from, sorry, just putting it blunt, like a trash environment in terms of expectations on what the human should be able to do and what they're expected in terms of an output. So got to Vancouver and I was making minimum wage, which was like $8.75, and the cost of living was twice as much. So I realized, okay, I got to work 7 days a week. So I picked up a second job, worked 7 days a week for a year straight. And I realized I still need more money. If not, I'm just going to die here instead of Quebec. So what's the point? So then I started baking again because I had met somebody at my job who I gave their family a gift of baking or whatever. And he came back to the store where I worked. And he was like, I just have to come back and tell you that I know that you're not religious, but your baking is a gift from God. You need to do something with this. And I said, oddly enough, I used to sell my baked goods in Montreal just to pay for university. So I was like, okay, I'll start it again. Then 2014 came around. And I was like, wait a second. I live in Vancouver. I'm pretty good at selling myself and this, the stuff that I bake. I know as long as you taste it, it'll sell itself after that. I decided to go to the local dispensaries and see who would be willing to partner with like some of my own creations, and they would white label it. So then in 2014, Weeds, the dispensary Weeds at that time, decided to allow me to white label for them, and they started selling my stuff. That's where it started. And then eventually Cannabis Culture became a partner as well. I think that was 2016. Cannabis Culture jumped on board. And then it just kept on evolving and evolving and evolving and evolving, and to the point where we're at now, where when I think about it, telling this story, never would have thought I'd be sitting here wearing my own apparel and yeah, talking about my company.
It's and yet crazy. Here we are, and you're Indeed. Looking fresh doing it.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Can I ask you a question? What is Always. White labeling?
So basically, I would make things under their brand. They gave me their artwork, and I would print their labels with like my name, with my item that I was making at that time for them, package it and bring it to them, and they would sell it.
Okay, thanks for explaining that, because I'm sure it happens quite often, probably in the cannabis industry. So I'd love for our listeners to, you know, get to hear a lot of what's going on behind closed doors, you know, and behind Absolutely. The products that they're purchasing. Let them know, you know, what's going behind the labeling and the producing of them. So thank
you. I'll say this very, very confidently. A lot of this country has eaten stuff that I've made without even realizing it.
I love that you can make that statement, and that you probably can back it, because
absolutely.
I've had the pleasure of tasting one of your items. So I'll tell the listeners, it did blow my mind, and I am not an edibles person.
Thank you very much.
So was it a choice from the beginning to infuse your items, your baked goods?
So at first I was just selling my baked goods because they sold off the strength of their taste. so I can make money. Just I could mark them up to high cost where I could actually make money because I needed to pay for my tuition at the time. So I was like, people really like it. So I got a list of people who really liked what I made. I would make carrot cake, banana bread, a lot of Caribbean style things. And then I would go to local restaurants in Quebec in the Lachine and LaSalle area and say, hey, I could stock your shelf every week with these things and you guys could sell on consignment. You get your cut, I get mine. So I sold because it tasted that good. And I was like, I might as well make some money with this. And then in Vancouver, I just needed money again because the cost of living was so high. And I was like, think smarter, put some weed in this and find a way to not make it compromise the quality of what you're creating. And it took time. It took maybe 3, 4, 5 years because at first I was starting with my infusion was, I was buying the butter pre-infused, which was way more expensive, but that's how I was introduced with weeds. Like they wanted me to use their products. But then I was like, okay, why don't I just make my own butter? So then I started doing that. But man, that is strenuous when you got to do it like the cheesecloth and make sure it's cooked at the right temperature, decarbing. Then you can't really guarantee the exact potency when you do it like that either. So then moved on to the next stage where I bought an infusion machine that also tested at the same time, where it put the oil in a centrifuge and you would put a perforated pot of marijuana inside and it would rip off the THC over hours of spinning it through it. Still, it was a better method. It saved time. It was an investment, but it still wasn't precise every single time. It wasn't a guaranteed. I'd have to have a range of what it would be. And then now we're at the stage where we're using a full spectrum distillate where it's just straight THC. It is measured. It's quantifiable every single time,
right?
Without a doubt. And it's also tasteless and odorless. So now we're at the point where it's a perfect fusion where you just buy the stuff because it's just that damn good. And you got to stop yourself from eating them because you have to be careful because there's THC in there.
Exactly.
So yeah, took some time.
No, but I like how, and I appreciate how you're explaining the work behind the scenes to our listeners because they should know it's not like a 3-month process to have the idea and to develop it. It is a brand, like the legal cannabis industry in Canada is a brand new, pretty much industry. It's 2 years old.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people like you who have been working in this industry, even predating that, you had to put years into developing your product. So
yeah.
I don't think we do our listeners any kind of service if we don't tell them the real facts behind that and you know, what the reality
Absolutely.
Is like.
It's not an overnight thing. And then finding ways to transfer what you make into the hands of employees to have them replicate that and still maintain the same quality. That was probably the hardest let go. Like, okay, now you guys bake. That was the hardest part, but it was necessary because I kind of have to transition into another role, another hat for the company to move it forward a bit more.
Right. And tell us what brought you to Toronto to do that?
Well, the goal right now out here is to expand the brand's recognition within the center of the freaking universe, as they say. And that's kind of the main goal. And then from there, before leaving Toronto, because the plan is to go back to Vancouver. That is the base. That's home at this point.
Yeah. We're never going to change your mind. We've got some time to change your mind still. No, it's not going to happen.
You don't have the landscape or the personnel. I'm sorry. Aside from yourself, you just don't have the landscape and personnel there for me. It's just they just get it right. But I digress. So came out here to try to acquire either the funding appropriately to expand the company where it becomes a national brand in the full sense, but on the legal side of the spectrum, not just wavering in the wind, kind of tired of that
area.
Yeah. I feel like the brand can stand on its own and be put on the avenues where it can be more respected on a above board level.
Right.
So the goal is to either partner with an individual or a corporation to do that, or sell a minority interest in the company. I'm open to other discussions depending how it's proposed, but that's for business discussions outside of this. But that's what we're working on right now, getting our ducks in order. And we're kind of, we're transitioning from a sole, from a sole proprietorship into a corporation right now. And we're getting help from Nicole on that one.
Great. So, yes. One of my previous podcast guests, Nicole Hines, and you are definitely.
Yes. Who I met randomly in Vancouver years ago. And I gave her my business card because we just got into a conversation. We just naturally clicked. And I said, here's my business card, and we should figure out a way to work on something. As she said, when we reconnected recently, that she had lost the card, but he came full circle through you randomly through three cities.
I love that's the little crazy part that I played into that. So I'll
work awesome
with it, you know, but
you're playing many, many big parts.
There's a little conspiracy going on in the background, and I'll reveal it to our listeners first. I think Nicole is low-key trying to campaign to get me to move to Vancouver, and it wouldn't surprise me if she's recruited you in her mission.
She hasn't, but honestly, now that I think about it, it would work very well for you, and I think all of your family members would enjoy the process too. The access to ICE is amazing. I'm just saying. That's you know, it's funny, side note. Yep. In my French paper that I wrote last week, like I always try to write about my own life to make it an easy writing. Yep. And I wrote about why Vancouver is where I'll be in 10 years, without a doubt. And one of the advantages was that there's the amount of great access to ICE. That was one of my main reasons.
You know,
it's great.
That's a huge reason, coming from my background as the mom of a burgeoning hockey player. Ice time was premium before a pandemic happened. Okay. But now, yeah, the key to any type of development or success is your access to steady ice time. And so, yeah, I could see how you would sell me really well on that. And we'll take that offline later.
Hey, let me just put it to you that, well, just last piece.
Yeah.
$15. There's an app. So we use an app in Vancouver that was made locally in Vancouver that is the whole world can use, but it's really used in Vancouver, where you go on there and there's ice times listed for every type of level that you want. You say, okay, I'll be attending tonight. You could pay by Interact or pay at the rink. You show up, you play your game, you go home. That's it.
So it's are so you sweet. Like, are you like a free agent shinny anywhere type of guy, or do you play with a set team that you've been playing with consistently the last few
years? Both. So I'll play with my team. And then if I want to play a game or two within the week, I just, okay, I'll be at this game. I'll mark myself as attending. I drive there in my Evo car to go car for $4, drop in 15, drive back for $4. Good night. And have some great weed waiting for you when you get home. Vancouver's great.
That would have been me back in my football playing days. So I can respect that, you know.
And no snow. No snow.
I'm a skier. I'm not afraid of snow.
The snow is accessible, and you could actually see it from your balcony because the mountain is right there. And you could say, okay, I'll drive up to the snow when I want to go. Or I could drive to the beach when I don't want to go to the snow.
You've got
all at the same time.
You're right. You're right.
All at the same time.
And now I think you're proving my point. There is a conspiracy. Telling my listeners again, there's a conspiracy to try to get me to the West Coast permanently.
That's great.
I'm on to the game.
Left coast.
So speaking of the left coast, which is could be argued the mecca of cannabis in Canada.
Yep.
What strains are you enjoying the most these days?
You're gonna hate this answer, and I think a lot of people who consume weed would be disgusted with my novice approach to my own consumption. I buy what's cheapest and I just try to make it work. Straight up, at my heart, I'm fundamentally cheap, and as long as it works, as I say, if it ain't broke, you don't fix it. So
when you said at my heart I'm fundamentally cheap, I wanted to say and Bajan.
Oh, absolutely, 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 gall blame boy.
Fortunately or unfortunately, those traits often run side by side with each other. It's not with you.
I can show you what I do know the name of this, of the two current strains, though. Although I will give a little shout out to this company. They are actually pretty good. Okay. They don't pay me. They know nothing about me, but I do like to get, I do like to point out brands that I do think are good. And so on Weed Maps, because I try to find weed easily accessible while I'm out in Toronto, because I'm used to being able to get it easy in Vancouver. Yeah. So I went on Weed Maps. I've tried a few companies, but this company called Black Rabbit, worth checking out. And they have locations in all areas, Markham, Scarborough, Etobicoke, like everything. You just go on their website. If you spend more than 120, so I'd like to get like an ounce at once. You spend more than 120, they send you three pre-rolls with it. And if it's your first order, they send you a jar like this of a premium strain. Like, they do a good job. Like, these are their bags that they come in on top of that.
Okay.
I use them as garbage bags even. Like, I have to give it up when it's got to be given up. They do a good job.
Okay, so now let's talk, let's get into the nitty gritty about, okay, so you're talking about $120. That's for an ounce?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a lot of weed. Mm-hmm. Are you buying $120 of the same strain?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would, that's why, like, so for Christmas, my friend decided to grow weed for the first time. She doesn't even smoke. She did a great job. So I mixed it with her El Profesor strain, which is what she calls them.
I love it.
So, and it's pretty good.
Okay.
I'm just, I just like salads.
But you know what? At least, you know, so, okay. I don't want to make any assumptions, but if I were to summarize what you're saying, your selection is based on cost and price point first.
1,000%. 1,001%.
You'll take $120 of one strain of weed rather than, say, pay $140 to have three.
Yeah. It's close at $140. It's close. It's close. $130, $135, I'll take those three. But $140, I don't know, man.
Okay.
That's $5. That's $5 right there. That's like an extra, like, that's an extra, that's a miso jour ticket.
In case, you know, any of our listeners think I was trying to be very, I was intentionally trying to see what, how soft or how hard you were, but that number was random on my part. Sorry.
Oh, good.
It's all I don't have anything to compare. I probably do. I spend more for probably the same amount, definitely, but I need the variety of my terpenes and my THC levels throughout the day.
I want it too. But it's cheap. And if it's good enough, it's good enough. Listen, that's it.
Listen, I'm half Bajan myself, so I can feel it, especially because I, full disclosure, since getting my medical cannabis prescription, the price point of medical versus rec, it's enough to give you another medical condition like heart failure. Trying to think of how to fund it because it's just not realistic.
Wow. It's more expensive.
Medical is way more expensive because it's you're gonna be hard pressed to find less than $7 a gram.
Nah.
Flower, and you can get some, like, a good 8 strains on the Ontario Cannabis Store, typically for less than $5 a gram. So, wow. You know, and then add to that the fact you got to pay your taxes on it, but most of us don't have coverage for medical cannabis. So, yeah, I think we're, the medical cannabis patient in Canada is really getting a raw end of the deal. With
see that. Education.
And it was interesting because my last call with my rep when I was going through my order, my prescription, and they were looking at my previous buying history, I said, you do understand, it's not that I'm consuming it. It's just I've had to buy it from, you know, OCS sometimes because it's cheaper. And they're like, yeah, but, you know, you're only supposed to buy from here. I go, I get it. But the economics and when you're on a
fixed basis, doesn't make sense.
You know, you got to do what you got to do. It you're not going to blame the person who goes into the grocery store and gets Equate or No Names Tylenol, you know, like it's acetaminophen,
yeah,
because they don't want to pay for the brand Tylenol.
They got to do what they got to do.
And that's where we are until, you know, the Cannabis Act and Health Canada reforms the act and maybe looks more at bolstering the medical cannabis infrastructure and forcing insurers to cover patients for their medical cannabis expenses. We're going to continue to see medical patients bleed into the adult rec market.
Yep.
Definitely.
It's getting messy out there.
It
Someone's
is.
Someone's going to have to clean it up eventually. I'm just trying to make sure I know where the broom's moving.
Right. Well, you know, you actually bring to mind a book I read early in my insurance career. But it was a little late when I read it. But I guess it was right on time where I needed psychologically to be to receive it. Who Moved My Cheese? Very important book.
Who Moved My Teeth?
Who Moved My Cheese?
Oh, cheese. Okay. I was like, how are you moving teeth?
Oh, that's another conversation for another day. But yeah, thanks for letting me rant on my soapbox about the medical cannabis system. You have lived in three major urban centers in Canada. Tell me what you think of the different cannabis systems there, or the access to cannabis in all three of those regions.
Well, I'll say the most experience I've had has been with Vancouver, because like I said, I only started smoking really in 2009 and I moved to Vancouver in 2010. So it was like immediately I was sent off to somewhere else where actually my mom was really afraid. She's like, I heard they do a lot of drugs there. It's like, Mom, if I don't do drugs here, I'm not going to do drugs there. it's not going to change. And I mind you, I should say, I don't think of weed as a drug. So I mean like drugs.
No, rest assured, I don't think so either.
Yeah. So when I got to Vancouver, it was just like before it became legal federally, it was actually better in Vancouver because it was the Wild West, and the Wild West was actually governing it itself literally. Like there were laws on the books for how to handle weed companies. So it was as if it was a legal jurisdiction that was operating in a perfect way. You had a dispensary at every corner that you wanted. You had competition. The prices were great. You had variety. It just made sense. You were done work. Okay, I'm just going to walk home. I'll pass by the dispensary, grab what I want. That's it. They sold edibles. They sold everything. Then they started cracking down on the edibles. And then when they stopped cracking down, they came back. And that's when I joined with Cannabis Culture. First, I was with weeds. They cracked down. Everybody stopped selling. Then when I came back with Cannabis Culture, and then everybody was selling again because we're like, okay guys, I guess we're all doing it again. And I said, fuck it, we're all doing it again. And then I decided, hey, I'm just gonna start doing it myself too. So then we started the online business, and people there kind of like, this is what I really like about Vancouver, and I think every urban center's character bleeds into their business structures and their business practices and their business cultures.
Yeah.
So out in Vancouver, it's, listen, everybody, we know it's expensive to be here. Do what you have to do. Do it right. Make it work. We'll figure it out. Like the dispensaries opened up because there was a demand. They behaved. The drug dealers were funneling their weed through there, so there was less crime about it. It was structured. It was helping the economy. There's money in the economy. More is being built. Like Vancouver was actually built off of weed money in the purest form.
Right.
And they just let people be. They only regulate you when you do something stupid.
Okay.
And then the regulation will make sense to make sure nothing stupid happens. It's a very practical city.
Okay.
But it's expensive if you F up.
Okay. Yeah.
Whereas in Toronto, I feel like Toronto feels like this for everything. They see somebody do something, they're like, we're going to do it and make it better. That's what they always try to do, but they always fail at making it better. Then somewhere they find out, okay, well, I guess this is what we do it. This is how we do it. And this is our thing now. But they never start off with an original idea about something. They try to co-op an idea with sheer number and force. They tried. So then when Cannabis Culture came over to Toronto, they tried to open up stores like the Vancouver model. All that happened was they got arrested, because that's how they do it here. Like, no, don't come here and do that. They just got arrested and shut down. They were too Vancouver bold, like hippies. Yay, we're going to smoke our weed. It's not Vancouver.
No. And I remember hearing a lot on the news whenever they would shut down a dispensary. One of the times I went to visit Cafe I remember feeling like just the process of visiting cafe versus going during pre-legalization. Well, in the early days of legalization even, okay? Okay. Let's say November 2018, you know, maybe early 2019, I would visit like cafe or wherever, and I would go to the indigenous reservations and their dispensaries there. Night and day experiences. In cafe downtown, I literally felt like, could we get raided?
like you didn't feel like you were like safe.
I felt like I was taking an additional risk, not, you know, yes. in the back alley, not, you know, I'm hanging in the gates.
But like legal way.
No, I felt like I was taking a legal risk
of yes.
by, you know, by not yeah. practicing quite the due diligence. You know, it's like, you know, those instincts that scream at you when you're in a scene on one of those Miami Vice, you know, TV show episodes, and you like, you know, something's going to go down. Something's going to go down. Yeah.
Like the spot feels hot.
It felt hot. And then when I get upstairs at cafe, it got hotter. I mean, I thought someone was blowing heat into the room. And I was like, what are you working here? Like, this feels really funny. And a little bit like New Jack City. Like,
yeah, no. See, I never got to take part in the Toronto process of like that, because I wasn't here during that phase of me using regardless. But now that I'm here, like even visiting last summer or the previous summer, it felt so government regulated, and the prices were like, I'm not paying this. I'm not, no, I guess you're gonna have to lock me up because I'm not paying this. That, like, coming from where I came from, I was like, I can't justify this.
And what was the price?
It was bad.
You're looking at? Do you remember what the per gram price was that was turning you off?
Honestly, I looked at it only once to the point where it didn't even stick, because when I saw it, I was like, nah. But basically, if I were to buy my normal quantity, which is an ounce, it would have cost me double the price.
Okay.
And the thing is, I'm not even getting the best weed or equivalent weed.
Right.
And if you get their cheapest, you don't even want to smoke it when you get it. I tried buying from a legal shop last month or month and a half ago on Queen. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, you know what? That price is fair and I could pick it up. It's $135. It's what I'm willing to pay roughly. I smoked this thing. I was like, why am I smoking hay? I was like, I'm so mad right now because I spent this money and I'm smoking hay.
Listen,
there was nothing happening.
Twitter and told them what you think.
I ain't got time for that.
Listen,
but I also speak from this brand at the same time, so I have to maintain a certain tenor of how I approach the powers that be, considering how I know they already view what I say.
Then you need to make some influencer friends and get them to write their reviews.
I'm going to start being more of an influence myself moving forward in 2021. That's more so what I'm looking to have done. I'm trying to expand the brand's social impact. I'm getting too comfy on the fact that I have enough repeat business, because once somebody tries, they just keep buying. And I've gotten a little too comfy on that, to be honest.
Right.
And the plan is for 2021 to really like set everything on fire and really make some moves, make those power moves where you could look at people with a stink face like,
Speaking of power moves.
Yes.
What did you think of, because I think the big power move a week ago was the news of Jay-Z and his collaboration, his purchase of, is it that collab with the cannabis company that he bought, Maliva, you say? What do you think you may not know anything in terms of the details of that company and what he's doing or what his plans are. But what did come out was that there was a $50 pre-roll.
That's the part that I got. I was like, okay.
What'd you think of that?
One, growing up listening to Jay-Z's music, it was always clear that he referenced weed in a way that it was, because it was within his sphere of discourse, but not in a way that he was an avid consumer or knowledgeable user, just more so a pusher. He didn't get high on his own supply. It was very clear, very, very clear. And it's reflecting in how he's marketing selling weed, because he's trying to sell like his lifestyle, not like he's not trying to adjust to the lifestyle that is already incorporated with it. Yes. He's trying to make it a brand where it's selling because of his name, not because it's good, not right. because it's value. It's because Jay-Z made this. And that's a really niche market to sell to, and you got to find ultra rich people who are buying your weed just because it says your name.
Right. And that's,
I don't know,
a little hard. I think that's a bit of a hard sell, because they're going to be looking at what's the quality of the weed for $100, right? Because
even he doesn't know anything better than a Vancouver grower.
Right. Also, let's think of what you, when you pay that kind of money right now, let's talk about the pre-rolls that could be on the market for that. Those are pre-rolls that have more than just premium cannabis in there. There's something else, whether it's, you know, the RSO or the honey or something ripping and dipping it in.
Yeah.
I can't be, I don't know if I can.
That's not going to last.
A consumer who knows cannabis that comes in and says, here's the $50. Thanks for that little pre-roll container. It may be a very gorgeous container, but it can't be, you know, the laws are going to dictate. The laws of packaging are going to dictate how he can even.
Well, here's what I would say to that. We might be jaded by how our packaging laws are enforced, because I'll tell you this much, like while in Vancouver, me and my friend, best man to my wedding this July, we would take drives down to Washington, because it's heaven down there in comparison to even Vancouver. And the level of packaging would make you lose your mind. Like there's no restriction.
Wow.
There's so he can do whatever you want in terms of packaging there. I'd say don't ever even think about our market. Our market is so now reversed into stupidity that it's a hindrance.
Okay.
Because the merger with Aphria and Tilray.
Yeah.
The main benefit to that deal is that they're going to move their headquarters to the US, so they grandfather themselves into the US market.
For federal legalization.
Yes. Right. Because you think an American government is going to tell all these Canadian companies to now come in here and take over their marijuana market? It's not going to make sense whatsoever. So Aphria and Tilray have their hands in European markets already, and now in the American market, they're moving their headquarters to the States. It will no longer be a Canadian-based company. So the process up here is it's shooting itself every day, single day. Sorry to go on that tangent, but.
No, and that's a very accurate way to describe it. Shooting itself in the foot.
Yeah.
What I do see though in the future is, you know, and I'm looking forward to, is hearing more of your voice on these matters, because, you know,
you will.
You know, the Chamber of Commerce they're doing, you know, these seminars or these open call town halls asking for opinion of people in the cannabis industry. They want to hear the voice so they can tell, you know, the group of overpaid stiffs that are going to revisit the Cannabis Act, what's good and what's bad about it. So,
you know. I'll be honest with you. I'll be very, very, very honest with you. This is going to sound arrogant, and I believe whatever you pray to or believe to, I believe we're all built a certain way without our control. Some things some people are afflicted with things to humble them. I have a severe speech impediment. Although I believe I am the voice to speak on behalf of these things, I think I'm humbled with that impediment. So at the same time, I'm also not comfortable being put on the spot to speak necessarily. But I do believe when I do speak, it has been taken with value and it has helped move the discourse forward. But I never want to be the guy. I just want to make sure I know how to get the guy to say what needs to be said.
I hear that.
I can give you the words.
I can appreciate that, and the distinction or the nuance between the two.
Yeah.
What are some of your life's other passions beyond cannabis?
Psychology, due to a speech impediment that I've been afflicted with my entire life. So right now I'm studying with the goal. The ball moves forward slowly since I have so much going on in my life right now. So I take 2 to 3 classes a semester. The goal is to get a PhD in psychology with a focus on speech impediments so I can figure out how to give people like me an answer that is better than breathe, calm down. Okay. You can do it, because that is so useless. And it's also, it's so aggravating when somebody tells you, you speak just fine. You're just making it up, because I'm probably the best case example of that, because I have so many variances in options of words that I can choose to get my point across. So I can navigate my bottlenecks. But for those who can't, it just robs them of so much confidence. Imagine when you greet somebody and you can't say your own name, you immediately believe they think you're stupid. And that does something to you, that it rips so much of your confidence away. So that's my reason for being right now. I just want to get to the point where my research can be respected and will derive a cure, or at least a path towards a cure for people like myself.
I respect that. And I really, I celebrate the fact you're doing that. That's the not only just how it's going to help yourself, but your commitment to trying to help others.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
You know,
it is a very, it's a painful thing to be afflicted with, because there are so many who can't see what it does or how it affects. They just see just calm down. But it's so much deeper than, I don't need to calm down to know my name. There's something happening here. I should be able to say my name without wondering, will I be able to today?
Right.
That's a problem. That's the cycle. There's something going on there in the wiring, in the hormones, in the transfer, in the evolution of our genome, and how it programs our proteins. I've done a lot of research on it right now. I won't devolve into the random jargon on it, but there's something going on there, and I intend on figuring out what.
Well, I look forward to hearing more about what you discover and the conclusions you come to. And if I can ever have you back on my show to discuss it,
anytime,
let me know, you know, because
anytime.
I love all of what you bring to the cannabis industry. And I think this PhD in psychology is just going to help all of us in this industry even more. So thank you for sharing.
I think so. Thank you for allowing me to.
Well, before I let you go, because I can't keep you on forever, I wanted to ask if you could tell our listeners one more time where they can find you on social media.
So on Instagram, we are Grams by Treats, GRAMSBYTREATS. I'm a terrible speller. I also am pretty dyslexic, but that's another story. then there is also Tweets by Treats on Twitter.
Oh, I love that.
Yes. The fiance rebranded the entire company with all of these because we couldn't acquire Treats and Treats for All. So Grams by Treats for Instagram, Tweets by Treats for Twitter. On Facebook, it is Treats and Treats. And always, always visit www.treatsandtreats.com. Always. To get your edibles, then you could also visit our blog there. I'm going to start writing a bit more. Like I said, I'm trying to get my voice out there more. So I'll be providing more insight into urban affairs and how they correlate with marijuana and Treats and Treats and how we can play a role in it. So you'll be hearing more from me.
I can't wait, because I think we all need to hear more from you. Your voice needs to go.
Merci beaucoup. Vous êtes très gentil.
Merci. And thank you again for giving me practice. And thank you for talking to me today.
My pleasure.
Pleasure talking to you.
All righty. Salut.
You've been listening to the Miss Weed Wiki podcast. And we thank you for your support. I've been